Rich Kimble here, Bruce Pratt. And time for Sports Lit 101 this afternoon, talking about a book recommended by a previous Sports Lit 101 guest, Tyler Hellard, who said you got to read it. And Bruce, you're glad you did.
Yeah, when I first decided I was going to try and create a class at the university in hockey lit, I knew two things had to do. One, I had to read lots of hockey books. And two, I had to consult with people in Canada where most of this stuff was written to make sure that I was getting exposed to the best, and that so that the course would have the kind of rigor it should stand up to be a university class. So I spent 2 years reading essentially almost nothing but either nonfiction or fiction or poetry that had in some way something to do with hockey. And one, the first book that everybody, whether it was Randy Maggs or Andy Abdu or Jamie Dopp or Don Morrow, anybody said, Fred Mason up at UNB, you got to read King Leary by Paul Querington. So I did. Now, Querington died in 2010. He was only in his early 50s, and he wrote about a half a dozen well-respected Canadian novels. He was also a member of a number of bands. He was the guitar player for Kathy Stewart, if you remember back far enough, the Canadian folk singer. And he played in a duo with a friend of his. But he was also the lead songwriter behind a band called the Pork Bellies and the Great Depression, or I forget exactly what the name it was. But I didn't know a lot about him. I knew that he made some movies and the like. So I read King Leary, and we talked about that book 3 or 4 years ago, maybe even longer. One of the best books, novels that is about hockey but isn't about hockey. And so when we were talking to Tyler Hellard, and you and I talked about how much we like Searching for Terry Punchout, he said to me, you must have read King Leary. And I said, yes. In an email exchange, he said, do you know Logan in Overtime? And I wrote, no. So I called up my friend Gibran, and I got the book sent to us. And it's really good. Now, this book goes back. It was written in the late 1980s. And the premise is that Mars Logan, who is a goalie whose knees were so bad he had to leave the NHL and is now playing in the lowest level of professional, semi-professional hockey in Ontario, he is convinced that aliens from the planet Sirius are why his knees got ruined. And Mars Logan drinks a lot and parties a lot and has had a pretty up and down weird life. But the book starts out with him being a very young boy opening a giant book with a map of the stars, and he can never, when he goes outside, find those constellations that he can find in the book. Well, that may sound like sort of a goofy premise, but that's not really what the book is about. At one point, Logan gets involved in a game that goes into overtime and into overtime and into overtime and has to be suspended for periods of time, remains in overtime, and suddenly when it becomes the longest hockey game in history, Hockey Night in Canada wants to find out about it. Now, in the little town of where he lives in Ontario, everybody starts to descend. There's a player sent to play for the other team who was his nemesis when Mars was in the NHL. He's got a couple of women in his life, and he's got a couple of nemeses in his life. He's got a father who's, as they say, half a bubble off plum or missing a little loose in the upper works. And all these characters collide, sometimes in one of the two drinking establishments in town, in just incredibly neat ways. This book is hysterically funny, the way Searching for Terry Punchout is. But like that book and like King Leary, it's really a story of redemption, and it's a story of how Logan sort of finds himself back, Mars Logan. Logan finds himself back to the way he was. There just is no more richer assortment of characters in a novel, and it's beautifully written. And sometimes hockey humor, when it can be sort of choppy and crass, and it's guys on the bus and whatever, but this is not that. This is a lot of time spent in different characters' heads. There's a lot of interior monologue in here, which is just absolutely brilliant. Now, his King Leary won the Stephen Leacock Award. It was a huge award in Canada in '88. This was written before it, but didn't come out till later. He wrote also Home Game and Whale Music. Now, Whale Music is interesting because it was made into a movie, and there were many award-winning musical things which he did. And if I sound slightly distracted for 1 second, I did want to also say, so I wanted to know about his music. I didn't know enough about it, so I checked it out with my friend Garnet Rogers, who wrote, I asked him if he was a good songwriter. He said, actually, all the guys in that family are kind of annoyingly talented. His brother Joel, who lived with my cousin Lorna, is a terrifyingly good upright bassist with the Toronto Symphony, as well as playing in jazz ensembles. Tony Quarrington is a deadly guitar player who was still on the scene in Toronto, used to play in a great band called Joe Hall and the Continental Drift, which was one. Paul sang an exquisitely beautiful song at my cousin Lorna's funeral about going out to look at the stars, knowing that everything was ending and he was already on oxygen. Now, going out to look at the stars comes back to this book where the constellations play this very, very huge role. So it's, you're going to have to go through a bookseller who can get used books or find books that are not commonly in print, because I don't know that this is there anymore. But it's a really great book. And the kind of humor that Quarrington has, he was asked about the movie made from his last book, and he said, well, it's semi-autobiographical, him being named Paul Quarrington. He said, it's about a guy who wastes his talent writing for TV, drinks too much, ruins his marriage. It's different because the guy in the book's name is Phil. So there's all that kind of gallows humor all throughout this, but the redemptive quality of both King Lear and Logan and Overtime make them really stand out as great books. So often there are so many great authors writing in English in other countries that we just don't know enough about here. But
now, when was this written?
This was written in the late 80s, but I believe it was not published until 1990. Yeah, it didn't get published until 1990, and it predates King Lear, but I would get them both. There's a third book in the trilogy, which I am hoping to get to before too long. But sadly, he's got long.
Where did you track that one down?
I tracked this down with Gibran.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. He got it. He got it in for me. Briar Patch. Yeah. Look, man, if you see a book and it's not in print and you see it's available on Amazon, you can get a reader's copy. You're not going to save yourself any money or aggravation, because if you go to the Briar Patch and the book doesn't come in the shape it's in, Ron can send it right back.
Right.
If with a regular order. If you buy a book and it's not what they say it is, whatever. I just went through this with a book that nobody seemed to be able to find. Don't do it. Go to your local bookseller and have them get it. And Briar Patch is the best.
There you go. Some good advice right there. Bruce Pratt, Sports Lit 101. What will we be discussing next week on the segment, sir?
I expect if I get through the last 160 pages of, I've been reading this phenomenal biography of Arthur Ashe by Raymond Arsenault. And it's really great. It's long, and it's incredibly detailed. It's like reading a Doris Kearns Goodwin book, where the grasp on what other people might think is minutiae is phenomenal. So it's taking me a while to read it because I'm reading it very carefully. But I've always had a great deal of respect for Arthur Ashe. But, man, after this, what a brilliant, decent, courageous guy he was. And I'm looking forward to I got about 380 pages in. I got to get to page 604 or something, so. Want to get done with that. I've been reading it for about a month, but it's really, really good.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Now, we're going to talk with Red Gendron about Maine hockey here in just a few moments. But while we had a little bit of time, we've talked about it a bit, but you were there. Can you talk about the performance you were so impressed with by the Maine women's hockey team in their final regular season game?
Yeah. There were four players suspended. There were two of the top six scorers injured. And there were two players playing hurt and courageously hurt. Ebba Strandberg had been dealing with back spasms. Michelle Weiss has had an injury, which I'm not allowed to go into, that she's battled through. With only really 13 skaters, people who could really play. They were 15 dressed, but 13 who could really play at full speed. They took on the University of Vermont team with their entire team there in one of the most incredible matches of courage I've ever seen. We needed to win. Maine needed to win. They got a tie. Carly Jackson was phenomenal in net, but the effort was unbelievable. I mean, they were going out every other shift and playing at very high-speed game. When the game was over, I was standing behind the Maine bench. I had to walk all the way around to the visiting team entrance where the women's team comes out to compose myself before going on the ice for the senior night celebration, because I had tears in my eyes. I have never, ever been prouder to be associated with any athletic team, not one I coached, not one I played on. That was one of the most courageous performances I've ever seen. One of the Vermont coaches came over, who I know because he used to coach at Maine, and Alex just gave me a huge hug and said, man, to be part of that is something you'll remember your whole life. And he was right. It's a memory I will cherish as long as I live. That was just courage on 10 and beyond. Phenomenal, gutsy performance.
So the team misses out on the postseason this year. It was an up-and-down season. They had some injuries. They lost a lot of people for a time to be playing somewhere else. What's the prospect for the future for this Maine women's team?
Well, I know they have three outstanding scholarship defensemen coming in for next year. The nucleus of play, they lost three players to graduation. Yes, Allison Mateau and Lydia Murray and Kaylee Hutchinson were important players, but they're only losing three, and they have an extraordinarily talented junior class. So they have all their goaltenders coming back. They have, Ebba Strandberg's health, I think, is you know, up in the air. I haven't had a chance to talk to her. She's battled real back injuries for a couple of years, but with what's coming in and what they have and the young players and Ida Press is as good a defenseman as I've ever seen, I think for next year it's going to be great. Remember, this team started out 7-1-2. They had just a slew of injuries that really slowed them down in the middle of the season. At the end of the season, some things didn't go well, but I think the future looks really good.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it.